This is the Friday, July 15th, 2016 version of the Market Analysis segment for Market to Market. It's possible commodity traders were mimicking the latest Pokemon craze this week, looking at their smartphones and bumping into unseen passersby. However, it is less likely they were trying to catch them all, and more likely they were after elusive profits. For the week, September wheat fell a dime. The nearby corn contract continued its losing streak, falling 3 cents. Weather markets and quarterly stocks had little effect on the nearby market as the August soybean contract fell 11 cents. August meal followed the trend, going $6.90 per ton lower. In the softs, July cotton added to last week's gains, leaping up $8.47 per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, August Class 3 milk futures gained 54 cents. The livestock sector was down as the August cattle contract fell $1.30. August feeders dropped $3.88. And the June lean hog contract shed 90 cents. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index moved 85 points higher. Crude oil gained 54 cents per barrel. Gold retreated $31 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index picked up almost 3 points to finish the week at 360.25. Here now to lend us his insight on these and other trends is one of our regular market analysts, Dan Huber. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
We are excited to have you, and I want to start off this discussion with a question from one of our Twitter followers.
Certainly.
This one comes from Nathan in Inwood, Iowa. And Nathan says, after months of trading sideways this winter, is the more recent volatility in grains the new normal?
Well, I think it's summer normal, certainly. You know, and again, you always associate your most volatile periods, you know, during that June, July, August period in corn and soybean. So it's nice to see us have a pickup in activity. And, of course, with volatility comes opportunity. But I would say it's probably not much outside of the norm. And again, look at option contracts. Options have your highest volatility in the summer months. It's because the greatest risk of producing the crop is out there. So the two are hand in hand.
Weather, and the crops in the field.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's talk this wheat market.
Certainly.
We have a lot of winter wheat piling up out there.
Certainly.
How do producers manage that wheat, especially when they're producing, in some cases, double expected production,
sure,
when basis is collapsing and these futures markets aren't doing any favors?
Well, futures markets aren't really doing any favors. Now, granted, always you're going to have at the gut sod of harvest, you're going to have some of the worst basis levels out there, assuming there's going to be a normal crop. Even extend that out, this could create some problems down the road for corn. I mean, if we're utilizing some of the space to store wheat in. But that said, you know, I think you have to look at where the carry is in the market. Move your hedges, move your sales out to the furthest you can as far as what's going to capitalize on the carry. We're going to get basis improvements. There's no two ways about it. I mean, demand is not certainly phenomenal. I mean, export sales were not great again this week on wheat. But on the same token, you know, that once that glut kind of cleans up, we get the excesses off the front end of it here, we'll tend to see the basis improve. Granted, there's not much in the price picture right now that would say we have a lot of encouragement to the upside. So, you know, if you think you're going to go for a price rally, don't do it with the cash. You know, maybe turn around and have your cash sold. Try to do with the hedge to pick up a little basis. And if you want to be a bull, you know, do it with a futures or options contract so you can limit the risk.
All right. Are you hearing some more wheat feeding happening out in the Plain States?
You know, I honestly have not heard of that. I cannot imagine it's not happening, though. I mean, with the bushels out there, I mean, granted, corn is relatively cheap as well, but with the extra protein in the wheat, I just have to imagine we're going to see a nice pickup in feeding this year. So versus the last USDA report, billion bushels of wheat, we have a lot of wheat to get rid of. Same thing on a worldwide basis. But, you know, that said, you know, this market seems to have found value down here. We just need a reason to kind of come out of the hole at some point.
Okay. So hopefully not a whole lot of downside left.
Exactly.
All right. So, yeah. Taking a look at this corn market, mm-hmm, USDA report on Tuesday. Any surprises in there that jumped out at you?
You know, nothing huge by any stretch of the imagination. It was nice to finally have a little positive surprise instead of a negative surprise. Regardless, I mean, we tend to month by month, We get some kind of a shocker out there. You know, nothing was huge, but I think the trade really anticipated we would see the carry-in bumped up a little bit more after that grain stocks number. Of course, that wasn't the case. It was actually reduced just a little bit, so we did bump up some of the domestic usage a little bit. You know, and honestly, I look at the corn market, and I think moving ahead, we're probably even a little bit understated on some of the export numbers. We're battling higher dollars and things, but I mean, when you look around the world right now, we're seeing a nice increase in a pickup in demand from some key areas, China particularly. I mean, the last 2 months, they have imported record quantities of corn. We know there's issues in Brazil. They're probably going to be a buyer of corn this year. So right now, yes, ultimately, you're going to have Ukraine and Eastern Europe with corn, but we're kind of the only game in town, so it's a good position to be in at this point.
All right. Now, in the corn market and in the soybean market, there's been a lot of chatter about this perceived dome of doom, this hot spell that could be coming over the Corn Belt over the next 10 to 14 days. Absent that, or if it doesn't manifest as predicted...
Correct.
Can we see $4 December futures?
You know, I think that's about the upper limit of December corn. Without some kind of a spoof in there, well, I'll retract that a bit. That would certainly bring us there quickly. And, you know, I think that possibility is there. You know, granted, 24 hours ago, dome of doom. 6 hours ago, maybe not so much dome of doom. So, corn in less than 24 hours, we've had a 30-cent range. We've gone from 380 back to 350. I'm glad we bounced off of there for the weekly close. Now, I do think it doesn't necessarily have to happen in corn pollination. The beans are the ones that really kind of have the pump primed. If we could get a little excitement here in early August, you know, maybe worried about weather there, or see another little surprise in the bean demand. You know, it may be beans tugging corn up to those levels, but we're getting late enough in the game right now to think we're going to get back above $4 corn. Looks a little bit questionable.
Okay, so. Well, now let's talk about beans since you mentioned it. We did have
Certainly.
The WASDE report on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. On the soybean side, it appeared to be relatively neutral on the face, and we saw soybeans shoot like a rocket up to the upside.
Well, of course, I mean, step back to the June 30th stocks and acreage report. Those numbers were not bullish by any stretch of the imagination, beans shot to the upside. So here again, I think beans very sensitive to the news. I mean, they recognize, and I think you can apply the same story to corn as well, that a very small change in the yield and acreage numbers are meaningless. I mean, a bushel less on the soybean yield nationwide, and we could be back talking about 150 million bushel carryout instead of 290 for next year. So, I mean, there is still very little room for error. Again, I mean, this August period, and we know we associate August weather and how that bean's going to yield, and it's just a lot of things up in the air yet, to see how this yield is going to be this year.
So. All right. The shining star this week in the futures market was a market that we often don't get time to cover, but this week we have to here on Market to Market.
Absolutely.
The cotton market.
Exactly.
$8 a hundredweight to the upside. What happened?
You know, a long, long overdue move, I guess you'd probably say. You know, really on the USDA reports, not domestically, if anything, maybe neutral to a little bit negative. World stocks were actually cut, I believe, 9 million tons versus a year ago. I mean, it was not that quite a big reduction on the individual report. Plus, you're seeing, again, China being the 800-pound gorilla in the room. The Chinese interest in cotton is outstripping what anybody had anticipated. So it's when you look at the cotton market over the last two and a half years, I mean, we have been stuck in this range, you know, basically trading 66, 68 cents to the upper side, 62, 63 cents on the low side, and we've just ranged back and forth. And, you know, when you get into those long extended periods like that, I think traders will often become complacent. Oh, this is easy. You know, you get 67, 68 cents, you sell it, you get to the lower side, you buy it back, and we can just play that game. And they've been very successful doing that since 2014. Well, this week, once you push through the upper side, it's not unlike a pressure cooker where the lid blows off. There's a rush for the exits. All these people who have been very comfortable shorting at the 66 to 68 cent range, all of a sudden, this is not so much fun anymore. So they all rush out, and you know, it just fed on itself right through the close here today. So it probably a long-term signal that the bottom is in.
Okay.
It's a new pattern. Not that you can sustain this move necessarily for extended periods, but you know, it's at least broken us out of that commodity doldrum.
Are you aggressively selling bushels you're confident in up in these levels, or do you wait to see if we can run it a little farther?
You know, I think you certainly have to reward it for the crop that's out there this year. You know, this really kind of comes back to that whole macro picture as well, though, that, you know, I'm still a firm believer that the major commodity lows are behind us. You know, they were put back in December, January of last year. And, you know, the definition of an up market or a bull market is you're going to consistently put in higher highs and higher lows over time. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, the whole commodity sector right now is maybe a little bit overdone. You know, okay. Of course, you wouldn't know it by the ags, but, you know, gold and crude, you know, we've had some very substantial moves. Looks like we need to back that down a little bit. Now, cotton's probably going to fit in that same thing, but when you have turned the tide into a longer-term upcycle, you tend to find buyers on the breaks. You just don't get into these extended bear markets like you did, you know, say 2011 to 2015.
Okay. So. Well, now let's test that theory. Major lows are behind us.
Certainly.
Live cattle down another $1.30. Where's the bottom in that market?
You know, I guess I'm a little stunned that we have spent as much time or as much defensive action. You know, the cattle, you know, you can't say anything good happened here recently, but, you know, that move has been slowing down. You know, it's almost like we're trying to curve out this long-term major flat bottom. You know, cattle oftentimes, when they get to the lows, get very volatile. I mean, it looks like you're going to improve, and they slap it back down again. I mean, it's kind of this little game that goes back and forth until we ultimately realize that, all right, you know, we've gotten it cheap enough that we're going to start developing demand again. Certainly the dollar being as strong as it has been, and you know, this whole Brexit almost nonsense, but it is an impact on the dollar. You know, we know there's this inverse correlation between the dollar and the commodity market, so I think psychologically that's, of course, worked against not only cattle and hogs, but the grain markets as well, with the exception of soybeans. But it's, you know, so that's just a battle that we have to confront. So.
Now, you would think common conventional wisdom would say new highs in the stock market, we should see some additional strength here in these beef markets, but we're not seeing it on the board.
You know, I think, unfortunately, when you look over at the indexes, the equity indexes, is it really a rally because we think the economy is performing all that well, or is it because it's the only game in town? I mean, you can't go out and earn anything on fixed interest. You've got to go to higher corporate bonds or higher risk corporate bonds. Here, I think in the last week, 20-year Japanese bonds went negative territory, first time ever. 20 years. I mean, it's, you know,
well,
so it's just, we keep stretching it out.
A Swiss bond went negative
negative
10 days ago.
Right, right. So, I mean, realistically, what are you going to do with your money? You know, so it's commodities aren't, I mean, commodities have helped. You know, that has been one of the star performers as a whole, as a group this year, if you look at that, that Goldman Sachs index. But that said, you know, there's not anything really in the traditional investment realm that offers a great alternative, so money just keeps flowing back into the equities.
So on cattle, feeders and lives, you expect to be putting in a long-term graceful bottom.
Yes, yes.
Where do you see hogs going from here?
You know, hogs have really been very much the same kind of struggle. I'm a little surprised we have remained down here as long as we have. I know the fall months especially got into a little bit of extra pressure here this week. You know, I truly believe, you know, we're not really, yes, the numbers have expanded some, but, you know, we are seeing some pretty good interest on overseas business once again, particularly here again. China seems to be the person that our number one customer, and you know, thankfully, their economy came in at 6.7% again on their last GDP number, which a little better than expected. So hopefully that nation as a whole has stabilized. Interestingly enough, I mean, what they're really thinking they're going to see growth on is in consumer spending and services. Sounds kind of familiar to U.S. economy. But yes, absolutely, if the consumers are spending, that would ultimately have to be a good thing for our commodities.
Making
as well.
That transition from a manufacturing exporting to a service-based economy.
Correct. Correct.
Interesting. Yep. Dollar on this next week, higher or lower?
You know, we did sneak out a little bit of a gain this week. I tend to think I'm going to favor the upside. I mean, not because I'm necessarily a big dollar bull per se, but here again, just enough uncertainty with, you know, what's going to happen with all the turmoil in Europe. Not to mention the disaster down in France here this weekend, which when people are scared, they want to tend to come back to the dollar. So it would tend to favor it right now.
Trend is our friend in the dollar.
Yes.
All right. Dan Huber, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That wraps up the broadcast portion of Market to Market. But Dan and I will keep the market conversation going, including answering more of your questions during Market Plus, available on our website. And like us on Facebook. You'll find links to some of our videos, and you never know when we might go live for a behind-the-scenes report like we did this week with a series of special announcements. And join us again next week when we examine one man's legacy that stretched from High Plains ranch lands to the packing house floor. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.